You are listening to local and regional news produced by KMUN with help from our news partners. I'm Skylar Butenchin. It's Wednesday, April 30th. Earlier this month, the Astoria City Council pushed pause on an ordinance that would have excluded people from downtown Astoria if they committed certain crimes in that area. Police say the ordinance would help them address growing issues downtown, but some in the community worry it would target people who are homeless. At a work session Monday night, city councilors dove back in, discussing what they would like to see if the ordinance goes forward. At least one city councilor remains unconvinced. Vance Lump said he does not support the ordinance, and creating housing should be the city council's focus. City councilors Andrea Mazzarella and Andy Davis agreed, but added that city police need a tool to address chronic issues downtown. Still, if the ordinance goes forward, they want to see strong oversight and regular reviews of the exclusion zone rules in action. Mazzarella said the city should also support the creation of a daytime drop-in center so that people who are homeless and struggling to comply with the law have a place to go and a place to leave possessions. Astoria City staff plan to draft a new version of the exclusion zone ordinance for the City Council to consider at a future meeting. In the upcoming May election, Cannon Beach voters will weigh two competing ballot measures related to debt-financed city projects. The first is ballot measure 4235, introduced by residents Robin Risley, Samuel Block, and Alan Barber. If approved, the measure would amend the Cannon Beach City Charter to require a public vote on all non-emergency debts, bonds, or financing agreements over a certain level. The measure is a reaction to what happened last year when a Cannon Beach motel operator sued the city for approving over $33 million in bond financing for the construction of a new city hall and police station and renovation of the former elementary school without a vote from the public. Members of the group Cannon Beach Together, who backed the lawsuit, maintained that they should have the right to vote on what they consider to be a revenue bond. However, the city argued that it was actually a full faith and credit obligation bond and therefore not subject to a public vote. The city of Cannon Beach has expressed concerns over ballot measure 4235, saying it has ambiguous language and the potential for unintended consequences. So, in response, the city drafted and approved a competing ballot measure 4236. The city's measure would clarify when the council may approve debt without voter approval. It would also require the city to get voter approval before issuing general obligation bonds that increase property taxes. This story comes to us through a news partnership with The Astorian, online at dailyastorian.com. Public health authorities in Washington are raising alarms over low vaccination rates as measles cases continue to be identified across the country. As Spokane Public Radio's Owen Henderson reports, there are about 890 cases nationwide, more than triple the cases in 2024.
Washington State Health Officer Dr. Tao-Sheng Kwan-Get says as of last school year, 91 to 92% of kindergartners in the state were up to date on the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine.
That's a concern because that's below the level of Texas and below the level of New Mexico. And those are two states that are currently dealing with large measles outbreaks now.
Dr. Kwan-Get says to keep measles controlled, public health officials aim for a 95% vaccination rate. He says that while he thinks parents being thoughtful about what goes into their children's bodies is a good thing, the MMR vaccine has decades of data showing it is safe and effective. With the possibility of severe and potentially life-threatening complications from measles, including pneumonia and brain inflammation, Kwan-Get says the benefits of the MMR vaccine far outweigh any risks. So far, all five measles cases identified in Washington state have been in King County. I'm Owen Henderson reporting.
The number of detainees at the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Processing Center in Tacoma has nearly doubled since November. That's according to Washington U.S. Representative Emily Randall, who toured the facility this week. She says, unlike in the past, fewer individuals are being released while they await their hearing. Randall says the detention center has made progress in hiring staff to provide medical care for detainees.
While they have made up their big deficit in healthcare staff, you know, that doubling of detainees means that they need more bodies, and they're still down 40 individuals in the workforce. So, you know, I would like to see them staff up to ensure that they can take care of people in the way that they're responsible for doing.
Representative Randall says every person in the U.S., regardless of citizenship status, has the right to due process. Tariffs on imported goods are causing uncertainty for some Latino grocery store owners throughout the Northwest. NWPB's Johanna Bejarano spoke with some of them to get their reactions.
Going into Jose Esparza's grocery store in Portland, Oregon is like taking a little trip from Mexico to South America. Esparza's store, El Campesino PDX, sells products from Latin American countries.
Tenemos de diferentes países, papa criolla colombiana, tenemos...
In Spanish, he describes some popular products among people from Colombia, Costa Rica, and Nicaragua. Things like Colombian yellow potatoes and the Central American loroco, a flour used in traditional Salvadoran cuisine. Like other small business owners around the country, Esparza has been keeping a close eye on changes on import tariffs. Esparza says his suppliers haven't increased prices yet, but those suppliers are watching what could happen with tariffs, as prices could change.
No han querido comprar la misma mercancía porque piensan que tal vez...
He says his suppliers aren't wanting to buy the same products they have been buying. They think that consumers might change the way they spend money. Alejandro Jimenez is the owner of Cabana King Supermarket. He has stores in Richland and Kennewick, Washington. Jimenez mainly sells products from Mexico, including traditional pottery, but people can find things from other countries there. Jimenez says smaller grocery stores could feel the brunt of tariffs troubles.
Los pequeños negocios. Siempre hemos tratado de traer el producto que el cliente busca.
He says small businesses try to bring in the products that customers need, but he says these tariffs could make it difficult for everybody, business owners and customers alike. Since the Trump administration began discussing import tariffs, Jimenez has been in contact with his suppliers, who are looking for other places to source their products for less. According to the Americas Society, Council of the Americas, on April 9, President Trump said that all countries would face a base tariff of 10% for 90 days. It includes most Latin American countries. Christopher Clark is a professor of economics at Washington State University. He says the minimum 10% tariffs applies to everybody, regardless of whether the U.S. buys more from a country or if a country buys things from the U.S.
The issue with a lot of Latin American countries is that these countries actually buy more from the United States than what we buy from them. We have a trade surplus with many Latin American countries.
Clark says the equation could get more complicated. U.S. companies could try to negotiate the price, which may not necessarily be possible in a competitive market. Esparza, the Portland grocery store owner, also says the pressure would be on the consumer. Esparza says that whoever sells him an item will pass the costs on to him, and he'll have to pass the increase on to his customers. I'm Johanna Bejarano reporting.
Tomorrow evening, a forum featuring candidates vying for open seats on the Warrenton-Hammond School Board will be held at the Warrenton Middle School. The Candidates Forum is hosted by the American Association of University Women, Astoria Branch, and KMUN will be providing media coverage that we will be able to link you to in the coming days. The program begins tomorrow at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. You're listening to news from KMUN. To hear us on the air and catch national news from NPR, tune in to 91.9 FM. Morning news begins at 7:59 every weekday. And of course, you will always be able to find today's local and regional news here at KMUN.org. To contact the KMUN News Department, email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org.